CliffCentral.com.
Taylor Swift with Style. Isn't that nice? Huh?
Good song.
That is. It's a happy song for a Wednesday morning. If you need a little pep up, if you need someone to lift your spirits this Wednesday, maybe you're having a shitty day. Who knows? If it's shitty already, you've got to examine the attitude. Really? Traffic can only be that bad.
Quick one. You know, I saw a meme the other day that said, you have a gun against your head and you're about to die potentially, but
what a great meme.
Unless if you sing a song word for word and actually realize, like, Taylor Swift's Style would be one of those songs for me. Ooh. So I'd be able to survive. Which one would yours be?
A difficult one, like Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire.
Do you know it word for word?
No, of course not.
Then you're
die.
Gone. Probably would be R. Kelly Ignition for you.
Here's the remix to Ignition. Uh-huh. Hot and fresh out the kitchen. Uh-huh. Mama rolling that body, got
word
every
word.
Man in
exactly.
here wishing, sipping on coke and
rum.
I'm like, so what? I'm
drunk.
It's the freaking weekend, baby. I'm about to have me some fun.
Mabalu Maloy?
I would go with an old school classic like Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You. I mean, there's no way that I'm getting those lyrics wrong.
Oh, yeah, true.
I know that word for word, back to front, left to right.
Yeah. Okay, hang on. I think we've got to test this.
Oh.
Ooh.
I think we've got it. Not now.
Okay.
But and don't go and do
research now.
You're not allowed to research it.
Okay.
All right, so we'll do this maybe tomorrow if we've got some time. Okay, quick couple of messages I wanted to get through. Adrian Groenewald from the Leadership Platform, which is brought to you every week by Sibanye Gold, says, we decided on cliffcentral.com that Sona 2017 didn't emphasize youth enough. Let's see how Musi Maimane did. And you can listen to some of their podcasts. Ruby Chikwiri, who's the producer of MZ17 with Aria Kelman that we just spoke to now, tuned into the GCS on cliffcentral.com to hear Aria Kelman talk about all things MZ17. And she has provided the links on Twitter for us. And someone says, this interview with Kelman sounds like a justification for Flax's recent actions. And this one is, I can't see who this is from, but look, this millennial stuff is a heap of shit. Kids that were raised too soft by their mummies and daddies. Look at the 20 to 30 year old entrepreneurs. They aren't stuck up their own backside expecting the world to give everything to them. They go out there and make it happen. These young kids today, they're all about me, me, me. Well,
yeah, but you are the ones raising these young kids. So
yes.
If anybody is to blame, it's you as parents.
Bad parenting, yeah. if you
yes,
are going to.
Yes.
And that's not what Ari was saying.
Yeah, tell him about it.
No, I mean, really. Stop
no,
it now.
And then this one. I feel millennials are new age hippies that embrace technology to give them a louder voice. And they don't have real problems.
Guys, can we just allow different generations to do whatever they want? I mean, our grandparents were completely different to our parents who were different to us. Like, just allow generations to be whatever the hell they want in that time.
I couldn't agree more.
Hallelujah.
Said by Sia this morning on AI Revelations and CliffCentral.com, owning a gun, he wasn't ready. Faisal. And then someone
I
else
saw
says,
that tweet.
Yeah, someone else says, Sia should not have a gun.
No, see, the thing is, I'm also from the hood. So if I owned a gun and you, like, cut me off in traffic, even, you know, gave me the incorrect change, I'd find stupid reasons to gun people down. No, that, yeah, me and a gun would be a horrible combination.
Someone says, one question for the millennials, why the beards? Well, it's not millennials, it's more hipsters.
Yeah, that's a hipster thing.
Yeah. I know lots of millennials who
you know
have
what?
Beards.
And in the 70s, beards were a big thing as well.
Beards are disgusting.
Beards and long hair.
Beards are disgusting in any generation. Let me tell you something. It's like growing pubic hair on your face.
Hey,
it's disgusting.
I'm actually.
She's got a tiny little beard.
You've got a little goatee situation happening.
The tiniest little beard of all time.
I think I want to do the whole beard phase at least once in my life.
That's disgusting. Hey, facial hair is gross.
You know, Oprah can look back
like when
at like decades.
When some girl takes
hair,
off her
so.
Panties, she's got a big bush. Ooh, it's disgusting.
Ooh, okay.
I have a bit of a
big stinking bush.
Wait, you have a bit of a?
I have a bit of what? I have a mustache.
Oh,
what?
Very fine.
No, you don't.
I do.
You don't. You're perfect. How dare you?
I do.
That's like peach fuzz.
All right, let's get lucky in here. I want to sit this guy down and talk to him a little bit. Bring him in here. Let me see what he's up to.
Oh, you have summoned him,
Lord Cliff. I've summoned him to our lair. That's right. Here he comes. Everybody get ready. It's time for a little bit of fun. Here is the man. Come on, have a seat. Make yourself comfortable here. Let's go.
Whoa.
Did you just fall off the chair?
Yeah. Early morning.
How's it, guys?
How are you, man?
Good on you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you the other day for the first time.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Because somehow we've both been in radio for a while and never met.
Yeah, I've always seen you at events. I've had a photo with you, I think, in like 2005 or 6.
I hope I was nice.
But no, you were like, hey, how's it going? I took a photo and that was it. Yeah, that was quick. Okay. Yeah. I've actually had to say that, Mbali, I've been listening to you outside and I've actually realized how much I missed you on air. Yeah.
FM radio.
Yeah, FM radio.
Oh,
yeah.
That's nice to hear. Yeah. Thank you.
We can make it sound like FM radio. Mum, just talk through this a little bit.
Lucky, this is FM radio.
Let's talk through the back. There we go.
Yep. Are we going FM? FM 1920s.
The battery's just dropped into her cleavage.
Yeah.
That's the kind of effect that I have.
Yeah.
just another day at the office, folks.
Do I press something here? How does this work?
Just hold this. It's on. It's ready.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Ah, yeah. There you go.
Now you sound familiar. There you go.
FM radio at its very best.
All right. How are you, dude?
Good, thank you. Good. Yeah.
All right. So, how are things going? I believe there are some changes going on.
Yeah.
Anele's going to breakfast.
Yes.
Whackhead's moving to afternoons.
They're moving to drive.
I thought you guys were moving to afternoons.
Hey, listen. No, I think that's our next possible move. That's what we want. But this move is obviously Dan decided after 15 years of breakfast, he's done. He wants to see his family more, his kids, he said.
Management decided that he needed to be moved out to I'll handle this so you don't get into trouble. Management moved him out to pasture and they've put Anele on mornings, which was their plan for a long time, and they finally had the balls to do it.
Yeah, but Anele's going to be great, I think, because I haven't heard
him.
I love Anele, so I have no issue. And I don't have any beef with Darren, so that's the way I see it. I know what management do. They mess with people. That's how they operate. Mm. They live to do that.
Please
don't go into radio management ever. You're such a nice human being. All right. So listen, Lucky has a fascinating history. You really have the kind of background that I think would position you uniquely in South Africa to be able to talk about things that other people can't talk about. Like when you talk about white people, you're actually talking about family.
Yeah.
When you talk about black people, you're talking about yourself and your friends.
Yeah.
But you're able to cross different places and different
– play on both sides of the green, yeah.
Like I think that's an amazing thing to be able to do. Let's just remind everybody of your story because I know you've told it 1,000 times, but there may be people who've never heard it before. So give us the gist of
it. The gist of it is –
first of all, someone called Lucky and then – Duplessis.
Yeah.
And he comes in and he's as black as me and my body.
Yeah. You tried it.
So I was my brother and I went to school together. We were grade one together. But before I met him in grade one, I was taken from my father. Taken from my father. My dad had a girlfriend at the time and she took me and we left Kimberley, which I originally was from. That's all I know. So I just remember the long trek from Kimberley, but between Kimberley and Johannesburg was a long, huge, massive trek and there was a lot of stuff that happened. So we moved in with this lady.
You were born in Kimberley.
Yeah, yeah.
So you spent your first 4 years or whatever.
Yeah, first 4 years or 3 years there.
In Kimberley.
Yeah. And then I was with this lady called Portia. Mm-hmm. And she, unfortunately, for me as a kid to see this, one day we went to go get groceries, she got raped in front of me. And
how old were you when this happened?
I was like 3, 4. Like I knew, I don't know what it was. I mean, now as a kid, now as a grown up, you understand that's what it is. And obviously it's one of the biggest problems in South Africa.
Were you just standing there watching and crying?
Yeah, they actually held a gun to my head, which made no sense because I was three and it was two guys. So they swapped. It was horrible.
And Portia was like your mom.
Yeah. Listen, what happened was when she took me from my dad, I stopped speaking. And, you know, as a kid, when you're young, you need to communicate because it's obviously, you know, learning the language, whatever. And I used to be, I'm Tswana, but I know no Vanak now because from then I just stopped speaking to her because I was so angry with her. And then once that happened, that incident happened, I remember her crying. It felt like years. I can never tell the day or the days because of obviously, you know, you're a kid, you don't know the concept of. When you're 3 years old, when your mom says to you, your birthday's tomorrow or next week, you think it's the same thing. So then we left that house eventually and we went to stay at this other guy's house. And he was weird. He had a lot of leather, I remember. And his house was covered in leather.
Oh my God.
And then he had... His house was mostly made out of glass, which was a very strange thing. And I don't know if it's if my mind was creating this idea of glass and whatever. But anyway, so he was very abusive to her. And I don't know why she wanted to stay with her after what happened with him after what happened.
A leather, like a BDSM dude.
No. He just wore leather pants a lot. I think that's what it was. And he was very abusive to her and me as well. And one day he left to go to work. And she was like, this is enough. And she burnt his place down. And we left.
Oh, yeah. Lucky, this is not the way most people grow up.
Yeah, no, this is not the okay, cool, listen, let's just, you know, you as a kid when you see and you experience this and whatever, it's so once that had happened, we then fled and we eventually got to Johannesburg, which we stayed in a little place in Florida, in the West Rand, in a little suburb called Unified. And there, like on the other side of the train tracks, and I'd walk across the train tracks and I'd walk up the road to a primary school called Law School Florida. So I went to primary school there. And that's
where. You spoke out for concert primary school.
Yeah, so I had to. So the first year, I didn't know how to speak Afrikaans. And then the first 6 months, they were like, you know, like you can't go on. And at that time, also, the government said, it doesn't matter where the kids go. If they're in your area, you have to take them, even if they don't have money. And I went in and, you know, I couldn't speak Afrikaans. So actually, me and my brother, I would speak English.
That must have been hard as can be, yeah. Man. That must have been tough as nails.
Yeah, it was very
nobody
strange.
Wants you there. You've got like
I was the first I was the first black kid in that school.
Oh, my God. It must have been hell.
It was hell in the beginning. And, you know, when I walked in, I remember walking into it.
They're all looking at you.
And I said, hey, guys, this is Lucky. And just make him feel, you know, at home here. And then everybody like kind of like looked down. Oh, and like looked away, and then my brother put his hand up. He said, "Hey, Lucky, you can come sit over here." And I sat next to him. And you know what the strange thing about my brother is? He's very clever. And at 7 years old, or I think 6 years old when you grade one, he's like, "Hey, listen, don't worry about them."
Younger or older?
He's a year older than me. So I was five when I went to grade one. So he said to me, "Don't worry about them. They just mean you can be friends with me. You can always sit next to me. You always have a seat here next to me." And at the first I was like, "Okay, that's weird." But now later thinking about it, I was like, my brother was like ahead of his time. And all the time he used to come to me and say, like, Portia gave me R100 to pay school fees. I mean, I remember those days.
Yeah.
And, I took the R100 and I forgot what it was for. So I was like, hey, okay, cool. Hey, guys, we want some, you know, sweets from the tuck shop or whatever. And my brother comes to me and says, Lucky, they're not your friends now. They're just your friends because you have money. And this is a grade one kid. And I was like, no, they are my friends. He's like, no. He's like, listen, and when the money runs out, I'll still be here. And he would say things like that to me at grade one. You don't understand. And then later when you grow, like when I grew up, I was like, it was so like ahead of his time as a kid. Like he's so clever compared to everybody else. So anyways, I stayed back grade one because I was too young and I couldn't speak Afrikaans. And I learned 6 months of Afrikaans and then I started grade one again. And I remember going to my brother's birthday. This is actually for me the coolest thing. My mom. So then I started staying at their house and like playing at my brother's house.
He wasn't your brother at this
time. No, not at the time. He was just shocked.
You speak of him now as your brother. Yeah. But at that point, he was just a kid who was nice to you.
He was nice to me, yeah. And then, so my mom now says to me, Lucky, we're coming to Charles' birthday party. You can come. And I was like, okay. And I was like, what's a birthday party? And she's like, you know, on the day you're born, your birthday. And I was like, oh, no. She's
never
like,
had that.
When's your birthday? And I was like, I don't know. So she goes to the school. She goes, when's Lucky's birthday? They're like, they don't know. Listen, he just got signed up. He had to come in. I remember the test I had to do to get into the school. I just had to name the colors of all the pencils. And I always swapped blue and red around because I didn't have, you know, the preschool grade naught, naught, triple naught, all that.
Oh, I mean,
so my mom then took me to some doctors in Sandton. They scanned these three fingers of mine. And they figured out by scanning the bone graph of my finger, you know how they work out how old a dead person is as well. If you don't know what John Doe is, they scan your bone.
Really?
Yeah, that's how they do. So they scan your bone graph and they go, this person is 46 years old. So they said, he was born in 1987.
But you don't know your birth date.
No. Then my mom said, okay, and what month? And I said, between July, August, and September. So those are the 3 months. So my mom said, okay, let's take the middle month, August, and let's take the middle day, the 15th. And that's what she made my birthday.
That's your birthday.
Wow. So that's my birthday now. Yeah. So that was actually quite a cool thing that my mom said, okay, 15th of August.
Okay, yeah. Hang on a second, because there are two things we've got to unpack before you even carry on with the story. At this point, how did you not end up being a disaster?
Yeah, so
because those are hardly the formative years that anyone would choose for themselves.
So it was quite like in grade in primary school, because my brother was such a loving person and I started then hanging out with his family. Oh, so then there was massive beef between Portia and my mom.
Yeah, well, so she was
upset. Yeah, she was kind of my mother and she was upset. So one day I would like to stay at my parents'
house. But Portia wasn't your mother.
She wasn't my mother.
She was your dad's girlfriend.
My dad's girlfriend, yeah. So I would stay.
You still don't know who your biological mother is?
No, I never know. And you know how some adopted kids want to find out who mom is?
You don't want it.
I don't want to because she left us. Yeah. And as a kid, I used to watch my dad box in the mornings. And then he would pick me up and he would carry me and he would walk. And he was a very – that's like the only kind of thing I have about myself is I love people and I'm open to meeting new people and I love talking to people. And my dad was like that. He'd walk through the town and he'd always wave and that everyone would say hello to him.
Do you have any connection with him?
Nothing.
Zero.
Nothing. Like, you know, you hear those sites that you go onto to find out your ancestry.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would work for me because you need kind of more and more relatives in some sense.
You need to know the parents' names for a start.
Yeah.
I mean, you know who your dad is, but you've got no connection.
Yeah. But then what happened was I went home one day and Portia said, you need to stop hanging out with these white people and they're not good for you, whatever. And I just kept quiet. And I didn't really still talk to her. I would just say yes or no. And because we were quite poor, so we stayed in this garage in this main house. So there was these people standing in the main, and she was the domestic
worker.
They then moved out and all the power got cut off and she, like, I think through all the abuse and everything that happened to her, she started using drugs, hectic drugs. Like only now that I realized as a kid it was like she got heroin, which I don't know how.
You were what, 5 or 6?
5 or 6 at the time. And I would always come home, wash my one pair of school clothes that I had, hang it up for the next day, go and do my homework, but before I would have to like clean the bed and make it and pick up, like there was always needles on the floor and whatever. And then one day I was missing from school. And my brother said, listen, mom, shot, like he wasn't at school 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days. My mom then came looking for me and she didn't know. So she said to the teacher, listen, where does he live? So I can at least go and look for him. And they said, man, we can't give you that information, you know, in case you're a parent who wants to attack another parent, say. So she said, just listen, I don't want to hurt his family. I just want to know if he's okay. So she eventually found out where I lived in Unified and she came and she drove in. And I remember it differently. And what happened recently, last year, my mom and I sat down and I said, mom, listen, I need to ask you everything I know. And you tell me everything you know, because I think there are gaps in the stories and maybe you can fill it in. I can fill it. So I remember it as going back from Charles' house to home and opening the gate and there just being no noise. And I'm walking towards the garage. And as I get to the garage, and usually my mom drops me off and then reverses and drives home. But this time she felt there was something wrong. So I'd walk towards the garage and then open the
gate. This is the garage where you and Portia lived.
We stayed, yeah. And there was nothing there. There was no one. Everyone had left. They packed up. That's how I remembered it. So my mom's like, no. How it happened was that I was missing for like 6 days. And they came and they looked for me and they opened the garage door and I was lying there and there was just nothing. And for like 6 days and I was like dry mouth,
had
no
Portia
water.
Disappeared?
She took everything. She took pretty much everything.
And she just left you there?
Yeah. So
In this abandoned house?
In this abandoned house. And I had obviously left my school clothes there, so she took those too, so I had no school clothes. And then my mom was like, picked me up and said, you know, took me home. And then my brother was like, why? Oh, lucky you're back. Are you going to stay for longer? And then my mom was like, yeah. And then the kind of process of adoption happened. But my parents hadn't spoken about it, but then my mom thought, okay, well, let's kind of, because they have 4 kids already. But yeah. Jeez. And then that's how the process of me and my brother kind of.
These must be extraordinary people.
But I, yeah, so in primary school, I mean, I was naughty as a kid. I spoke always. I always talked in class and stuff. But nothing bad happened, and it only happened in high school. I did fight a bit in primary school from previous stuff, but I think it happened in high school. Because in high school, I think you're more sensitive than you are in primary school. Because in primary school, you're a kid. Puberty. You want to play.
Yeah.
You want to – when you're in high school, somebody says – your name wrong and you get upset and you're like, no, it's this, or somebody says,
and you're more aware of
things. You're more aware of things. And I actually had to start going, these private schools nowadays, they have counselors at the school. This was for me fascinating, because coming from an Afrikaans I ended up being head boy at my Afrikaans school.
That must have screwed up their hair.
That must have been an interesting year.
Obama.
but they actually love, because I think they like me because I played. So my brother taught me how to play rugby, and he was very good. And he was one of the first people that played first team since standard three, and then I played as well.
I just have to remark on him. I mean, I don't know the guy except from what you've said now.
Yeah.
But for a kid in primary school to be as
forward thinking,
as like smart, emotionally adept, as that is just a extraordinary.
He's always been like it. Like, he's just like my parents, because we used to go to church in Geerkerk, Afrikaans. This is the times in 1995, 96, 97. So listen, whites and blacks are not the closest of friends right now.
No.
We're not like we are today. And my mom walks me into church, and we were always late because my mom had five kids.
Yeah.
She'd walk me in, hands
on the
shoulder.
You'd be the only black
in
guy the front, in church, right?
I remember the priest up in the front doing the opening sermon or whatever they do. And she walked me in, and when you were late, you'd always sit in the front pews.
Ooh. What, as punishment?
They would keep the front ones open. I don't know. They'd keep it open for
something. Because no one wants to
sit in the front. Nobody wants to sit in the front. And
especially when there's a priest spewing bile at you.
And
telling you why you're a shit.
And I remember we walked in. And you know when there's already silence, but the silence gets awkward silence. The father kind of like stopped in his tracks, like while he was speaking, and everybody, and when you turn in pews, the wood cracks, and everybody just looked, and people were like, "What?" And
that woman has adopted a black child.
He continued this like the thing, and he finished, and he was like, the end of it. A lady came to my mom, and my mom, people that know her, and like everyone's like, your mom is such a friendly and lovely lady. She is. But back in the day, when my first 7 years of staying with them, my mom didn't take nonsense from no one. She lady comes to her, says to her, this is the house of God. How can you bring this child in here? So she says, well, if it's the house of God, anyone's allowed. If you don't like it, go to another church. So that was like the first thing. Then the second thing, a guy, I remember she was holding me on her shoulder, and we were like at Pick and Pay, and all the cashiers were here, and I would like always take and help. And you know, as a kid, you like to put things on and then you move it or whatever. And this guy comes to her and says, you've betrayed our kind. And she just hooked him. She just slapped him. Bah.
Wow.
And all the cashiers were like, clap. And it was just like, my mom was like, she didn't take nonsense from anyone about that kind of stuff. Because people were very, like, and back in the day, they would like look at you and say things like, where now, if you're a racist, you got to be a quiet racist. Like, don't tell anyone you're a racist. Just keep it to yourself. Because back in the day, people would be like, yeah, they speak to him. And it was just, my mom was just didn't take any shit from people.
This kind of forces the question of belonging and identity politics and all of that stuff, which to you must seem like an absolutely ridiculous argument. Like, to you, you belong to the human race, and to you, there must be some things that are just not true to those of us who consider it important to be black or to be white or to be Tswana or to be Zulu or to be English or to be Afrikaans.
Yeah, it's strange for me. I mean, I always think of, like, you obviously get shaped by your surroundings. Yeah. Now, a lot of people say, and I've always said it as well, is, yes, I went through some hard stuff in the beginning, but because of the loving years that my parents and my brothers and sisters have given me, I've kind of blocked that back. And now recently I started going to a counselor, not recently, like 2 years ago, just to sort everything out.
Yeah,
because I realized
there's still some files that are missing.
And I didn't know where it was, and I don't know how I feel. And it was actually quite nice to go to a counselor and speak to them and be like, you know, hey, listen, this is happening. And then they tell you why. And it was quite nice. But you are shaped by your surroundings and you do become someone, but there are small little things that I don't know where I get it from and what it is. Like my dad, my adopted dad, he used to sit, you're not allowed your shoulders on the table when you eat. It's quite considered
your elbows. Yeah.
Yeah, your elbows. Sorry, your elbows. Your shoulders would be good.
Stephen Hawking can eat with his shoulders on the table.
My dad would do that all the time. He would eat, he'd put his knife and fork facing each other, and then he would put his elbows on the table. And later on in life, when I started, I used to watch him. And knowing that you're not allowed to do that, I was like, oh, is it because you can only do that when you're a grown up? And now I do that. It's very strange. So I've got all these little small mannerisms that I get from my brothers, sisters, and family now. But there are little things in character that I don't know where it comes from. And that would be
quite... That must be biologic.
Yeah, right? It's biologic. Yeah. So so that's
this
weird
is,
for me
this
to
is fascinating.
Have that.
I mean, in so many ways, what... And I don't like to think of you as a specimen. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But you've got to apply some of these laboratory tests. People always ask nature versus nurture,
yeah.
Which is more important.
Yeah, that for me is also strange. It's like I have this massive gap as well because I am a black person. I'm a black person in South Africa. I love being black. I love the like my friends always say, yo, the only black thing you have is you can dance. And I'm like, yo, and they're like, and in some intricacy, they're like, yo, no, that's the black in you, lucky. That's, and then also that's the white in you. And I have these little things that come out, but I've actually seen we as society have created these labels of this is what black people do, this is what white people do, and it's actually our fault, and it's worse in South Africa. And I've actually got a phenomenal story that I tell my friends all the time.
Yeah.
My friend, my wife's boss's daughter comes to her, white little girl, says, "Mommy, listen, let's call her Lisa. Lisa's coming over to play on Friday. Is that fine?" The daughter's say 6, 7, 8 years old. The mom says, "That's fine." She goes, "Honey, just tell me who's Lisa again?" She goes, "You know Lisa. You know she always does those funny faces and she does it." The whole time for an hour, the mom and dad have no idea who the hell Lisa is. They cannot figure out. They cannot. And eventually, they work out that Lisa is this little black girl. So the dad goes to the mom, "Why don't you just have the little black girl?" And then when she told me the story, I said to her, because we teach our kids to say that.
Yeah.
It's not a, oh, listen, it's John. It's John the black guy or Sipo. Yeah. You know, it's not Sipo. It's not just Sipo the architect or just Sipo. It's just, it's Sipo the architect or whatever. We put labels to
it. Yeah, we love to do it because.
That's how South Africans speak.
Yeah.
So I saw this white guy.
Yeah.
And he was da 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 da. Oh,
I'm dating this white guy.
Yes.
Oh, not I'm dating Mark or whatever. Yeah. I'm dating this. And it's such a strange thing. And we create these labels to it, whatever. And what was weird is when I played rugby and I was in a South African school, white people, white Afrikaans people loved me. And it was a thing. And whenever, like, I'll go to weird towns and...
You know, again, like if you're going to generalize, it's so easy. If you want white people to love
you,
play rugby. If you want black people to love you, learn some fucking vernacular.
Yeah. So in small towns, I'd walk in and people that look at me funny, whatever. And then as soon as I spoke Afrikaans, then I'd... Okay, well, maybe he's one of us. And I was like, well, I'm not one of you, but don't say that. We're not different. What's the problem?
It's not an us and them.
Yeah. And I also get like, but black people now also, like, I don't speak vernac, and that's definitely my own fault, and I should have taken it in high school or varsity. But, like, when black people speak to me in vernac, and I'm like, I'm so sorry, I don't understand. I've even gotten to a point where they say, oh, so where are you from? And then if I'm in a hurry, I'll say, Florida. I think the USA. Yeah, the USA. Let's say that.
Because then you won't have to explain.
Because then I don't have to explain. But if I say here, they're like, but why? And then there's questions. And then, I've got to. But it's so strange.
But this is the problem. This is the problem with identity politics, is it wants to put us all in
boxes.
It wants to say white people think this way. Black people think that way.
Yeah.
Straight people think this way, gay people think that way, women think this way, and men think that way. It's bullshit.
It is bullshit.
Right?
Like, my one friend, he's a gay guy. Well, he recently came out the closet, but he was friends with this guy for years. They've been the tightest of friends. When he came out the closet, his best friend, which for me, it broke my heart, said to him, I'm sorry, bro, we can't be mates. And I said to him, but I went to him and I said, but dude, he's exactly the same guy. There's no difference.
Yeah.
He's exactly the same guy. And he, like, for him, for 3 years, my mate couldn't, like, cope with it because he was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I mean, this is the guy I've known for years, the closest. And it's such a weird thing. It's like you've known someone. They haven't changed. They just told you that they –
But can you imagine how easy the world would be if we didn't learn our parents' prejudices?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And for some parents, there aren't prejudices.
It is actually our parents. But you as a person, yeah, you learn like, my parents took us to church, but my brother, Shaul, he's always been an atheist. He told my mom at 13, I'm going to stop going to church. She was like, why? She goes, Mom, listen, I don't believe in any of this. This doesn't make any sense for me.
Did she accept that?
She was like, cool, okay, you don't have to go to church.
I mean, parents don't do that.
Yeah.
Well, for her, it's like one less kid who gets ready on Sunday.
That's so good.
Not going to be late anymore. okay, fine.
This is amazing. So, okay, so you get a lot of shit from people on both sides.
Yeah, on both sides.
Because you'll get white people who aren't really sure how you fit in, but then once they find out you play rugby and you speak Afrikaans, then you're acceptable.
Yeah.
Then you'll meet black people who can see that you're black and they'll start speaking to you in vernac, and then you'll go like, sorry, I can't, and then they'll treat you differently.
Yeah. But the worst thing for me now is white people saying, oh, but you know, you're not like them. I'm like, that for me is the worst.
Well, that's pure
that's
racism,
the biggest
right?
insult I mean, that you can ever give someone. It's like, no, but you're not like them. You know them, and don't call them them. That's the worst. And on both sides as well, though. Yeah. It's like.
But do you feel, because this is a problem I've faced, in no way am I going to try and draw parallels between your life and mine, but I don't have a tribe. Like, I don't really have my people.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, like, if you're in the Portuguese community, then you're tight with the other Portuguese guys.
Yeah,
yeah. You're all poorers together. Yeah. And if you are, I suppose if you all speak Sepedi together and you're a small bunch of people who speak Sepedi in a certain place in South Africa, you're a community. I don't have one of those.
I don't know why we do it, though. I don't have it either. Like, listen, you know what the thing is, and I've actually got it. My wife says to me, I'm too busy, because on weekends I have a group on WhatsApp called Day Drinking. Sometimes I hang out with them. I've got a group called
Day Drinking. How does one crack an invitation?
Buddy, you can come
group.
To Day Drinking. You will love it. Okay. We think that Day Drinking is the way of the future.
I've officially invited myself.
Yeah. You don't know. She is that number on Day Drinking that doesn't have a name attached.
That's always sending guys, when are we going to do this? But so, and I've got other groups of mates, and the thing about it is that I love that I can go one weekend with them, one weekend with them, one weekend with and it's different people because you cannot. Yeah, we all have our tight group of mates, but you should be able to go, I want to.
We should shed all this nonsense. My brother has a friend who married a Japanese girl.
Yeah.
He's living in, I think it's Tokyo now.
Yeah.
He's speaking fluent Japanese. There are no other tall white boys like him in Tokyo that he knows well.
Yeah.
He's thoroughly immersed himself in Japanese culture. He doesn't even have much to do with his family here all that often anymore. What a story.
Yeah.
The guy's found himself a niche in the
Is
most
he fitting in
unlikely.
There? And are they lucky?
He is loving it by
oh,
the
that's
sound
great.
Of it. I mean, maybe he's bullshitting us, but he seems to be having the time of his life.
Yeah.
Now, that just shows you that all of this constructed nonsense should matter way less than it does.
Yeah. It is weird, but we as society have done it, and that's the strangest thing for me, but I feel like it's getting worse.
But listen, let's give you some credit in all of this, because when kids get the kind of first 5 years you had, they can turn up to be complete disasters.
Yeah.
And they might just spin out of control, end up doing every kind of drug to make themselves feel better.
Yeah, I've read the statistics,
you know,
actually.
The chances of actually making it through that are
getting to 18, apparently,
minimal.
From my background, is quite minimal. You either go into drugs or turn into, you know, doing this or doing that, and eventually if you succeed or if you're alive after 18 is very minimal. But yeah, so for me, I always say I've got to thank my mom and dad for that, because they just, if you create while an open environment but also a loving environment, you'll be good. But it's such a fine line as well. It's like you hear parents that love their children and they're so, but then they turn their kids, because they love them so much, they turn them into these neurotic, crazy little children as well. Mm-hmm. And it's such a fine line between balancing the, okay, listen, you know, because my mom would also say to me, Lucky, you know, when are your friends coming over? Who are they? You know, whatever. She always asked me questions and she always got me to talk. And I didn't speak for the first to my mom for the first 13, 14 years, well, until I was 14 years old, really about stuff. Because I was very shy. I was shy with her. And I actually didn't call her mom for the first, like, few years. And she... Because
what did you call her?
I called her Tani Mariki. So I legally got adopted at 12, because at 12 you can decide as a parent. You can. So my mom, what they did is they put three ads in the newspaper, three different days, three different newspapers. There's this kid, he looks like us, he's this hot, he's born this year, da 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 da. If you know, please contact us. 3 days went by, nobody came. My mom said, okay, cool, the adoption went through, everything happened. At 16 years old, Portia came back.
Are you kidding?
Said, listen to my mom. Hey, Lucky is now 16. I want him to come back to me, and I want him to start working so he can make me some money. And my Jeez. Mom was like,
forget about it.
You're lucky there's a gate between us, because, yeah, she was like, no, that's, thank you, but no, just get out of here, yeah. And my mom actually was so afraid that she would try to kidnap me. So for days, for like the first 2 months of like that year, she tried to get security to follow us and stuff. It was very weird. She was like, no, she thinks she's going to try to do something, but eventually nothing happened, which is obviously good, yeah.
So, I mean, what you mentioned that in high school you were a bit of a problem later on.
Yeah, so
stuff starts to boil up.
I succeeded very well in primary school. I ended up doing debating in Afrikaans, public speaking. I was in the choir. I played chess. I was first team rugby. I was head boy.
Overachiever. Well.
And then I got a scholarship to St. Stithians. Mm-hmm. And I went to Saints, and I continued playing rugby very well. I was in the choir still. They didn't have chess club, I don't think, at the time. And I got to, like I would act out badly, like when I was very sensitive and people would call me Lucy or would say this and would say, started calling me Oreo and Coconut, and I was very thin as a rugby player. So my nickname was Sticks in high school. So, and you get very sensitive towards that kind of stuff. And, you know, then you start going to psychiatrists and seeing them, and they try to help you through it. But as a kid, you don't understand. And you just like, kids are just terrible people. And
yeah, they are.
That, you know,
kids are mean.
And it was just, I eventually, the counselors at school didn't do anything for me, but my mom kept drumming and talking to me. And she said the most important thing, just Lucky, you're you. You're unique. You're special. Don't let anybody try. And if they call you names, it's just kids, whatever. And I just never understood it. I just never got it. And then only when I grew up later, I kind of got it into my skin. I have this theory that everybody, we age, you know, like we age, but everybody matures differently. Some people will be 13 years old and will be the person that they've always wanted to be. They know what they want to do. They want to be a doctor. They study whatever.
Like this brother of yours.
Yeah. And some people like me will take a few more years. And obviously the background of my history kind of took longer because of the stuff that I was going through. So I only really got into who I am and started. And once you love yourself and understand who you are, can you only then become more successful?
How old are you now?
I'm 29 now.
29?
Yeah.
And you said you're married?
Yeah, married. I got married last year, December, actually.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Do you know the woman?
Yeah, she's half Greek, half Italian. So yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a big family.
You're making this even more like colourful and smorgasbord.
Yeah. I was saying, actually, our child will be a quarter Afrikaans, quarter black, a quarter Italian, quarter Greek.
That is a good mix.
It'll be the dream. It's the dream Madiba wanted for our children.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, they say genetically those kids are way stronger,
yeah,
because they can draw on so much more,
yeah,
variety
in background, yeah.
But you know, Lucky, this is fascinating to me. So you're in high school, you were sensitive.
I was loud. I was loud because I'm an extrovert. I was still loud, but I was.
Everyone's a problem.
And I think I was
teenager.
Louder because I didn't really know myself. So there's always this facade that I kind of kept.
So when did you get to the point where you thought, I know me now?
Yeah, listen, it was late at maybe the last 2 years of high school, and in varsity I really got to know myself and understood and knew who I was, and then kind of started to grow as a person, yeah.
Because you're a communicator, otherwise you wouldn't be in radio, right?
Yeah. I loved doing it. I mean, I wanted to do this since I was young, but my dad said, radio is not a real job, but this is an actuary, obviously. He's like, radio is not a real job, Lucky. You will study 3 years. Then after you study 3 years, you will then work 2 years. And after that, you can become as many radio DJs as you want. And I was like,
what did you do at varsity?
So I then went to Vega.
And
I studied brand communication. I studied marketing. Those are the 2 degrees. And then graduated. And then I ended up working 5 years. And through the 5 years, the fourth year, I started doing some stand-up comedy and was getting really into it and doing very well And then somebody said, listen, do you want to go for an interview at Prime Media? And I was like, okay.
So that was your first radio job?
I was my first radio job. So I went.
You got the first job.
The first job I went for, yeah. I walked in, interviewed with Zane at the time. And they said, okay, cool, come back next Tuesday. And then I learned the engineering of the desk for like 7 months. And then, yeah, I started overnights and did that for 6 months. And then, boom, we did. Greg and I landed the show together. And then we just built through 5 years. We did from 9 to 12 on Sundays to now 12 to 3.
Okay, now, since we're on radio, like it's much harder to do a double-hander than it is to do a show on your own.
Yeah, it is. It's much harder because you got to work off each other. You got to play off each other. The thing that Greg and I felt, he's a dude from, you know, he went to Rhodes, but he also went to Edenvale High. And that's the thing I love about it as well.
Yeah, he looks like he's from Rhodes. He looks like he drinks a lot.
Yeah, he loves a good drink. But I actually realized that, and I said that to my friends. There's no difference between private school kids and public school kids. We're all the same. It's just private school kids, you might have more connections. That's the only thing. That's the only thing you have more in private school. But we are all, because he went into Rhodes, he came back and then he was friends with all the private school kids.
Yeah.
But me and him gelled so well together. And I think also the great thing about it is when we do the show, I'm not trying to be the star more than him and same as him. We want to do a good show.
Yeah, but isn't the key knowing when to be quiet?
Yeah.
If he's on a roll and he's doing amazing stuff, you let him do it.
I have to be, and I also had to mature on that. I was like, there were some moments where I was like, dude, you're talking too much. Let me say something. And then I realized, but if he's saying what he needs to say and it's great, then I don't need to talk. Then sometimes I'll just be like, cool. Yeah, I love that. And then God. And it took us about a year, but we found a great recipe that worked for us. Yeah. And it is hard. But you know what's strange to me is like I love listening to Australian radio and I love listening to like BBC and British radio. And they, like Australian radio has a lot of duos, same as New Zealand radio. And I feel in South Africa, we need that. But everybody is too busy. I want to be the star. And I know the formula is hard to get to, but if you go, guys, let's try.
I know my place. I mean, it's my buddy's show.
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so that for me is, but yeah, radio is the difficult thing to crack.
What are the major differences between having an on-air radio partner like Greg and a wife? I mean, obviously, apart from sex.
It's because it doesn't give me a lot of sex. No, sure. It's very hard.
But the two relationships, they're going to be similarities and they're going to be differences.
Yeah, the support, I mean, is obviously the similarities. The differences is, it's weird. Greg and I will tell each other everything. Same as my wife and I. And he'll say something and be like, don't tell anyone this. And I'll be like, but I'm going to tell my wife that, you know, I need someone to tell that to. Like, now, and that's the thing about secrets. So when somebody says to you, don't tell anyone, you're like,
But then I'm definitely going to tell.
Can I tell one person? Yeah. Can I just? Yeah.
Of course.
So you have this. There's actually so many similarities to it. It works. It's a partnership. And we trust each other. And then there's little fights that we have. Same as in a relationship where I'll go, dude, that idea doesn't work. It's a shit idea. We can't do that.
I'm curious about how it works on the phone. So if you phone like a department of government or you phone an insurance business or whatever it is, and you say, hi, I'm Lucky, and then they go, oh, okay, and they start writing down your name, and they say, say name, and you say, Duplessis, and that confuses.
I just came back from honeymoon. I went to Mauritius. I came back, and I had 7 months of hell trying to get my new surname approved on my ID because I had to.
What was it before?
It was Mosasane before, and I hadn't. So my parents got the adoption letter. Mm-hmm. They just never put it into the place. So I've never had a chance. So my name's always been Lucky Mosasane. So I went to go change it. Come back from Mauritius. Walk to the desk. Now customs, obviously in South Africa. Welcome back to South Africa. Hi, I'm Tabazile. How you doing? Here's a go. And then she takes my wife's.
Yeah.
Here you go, man. Thank you. And then she takes mine and she's Duplessis. Eh? And I was like, yeah. And she then looks and she calls someone else.
Yeah, because she thinks suddenly you're a guy who's.
And she's like, no, this is surely this okay. He's
identity
not,
theft.
Yeah, identity theft. And it's actually very strange. And all the time when I'm looking like a Duplessis, they're like, I'm so sorry, what? What did you say? You said Duplessis, yes.
Oh, there must be some very, very funny things that happened.
Yesterday at work, this lovely lady that she cleans for us and she also does our tea. And I've seen her so many times and I've known her for 4 years, but I don't think she knew my surname, or she knows my story. So she's like, Lucky. And she just wraps off in vernacular. And then Greg's standing next to me, and he's like,
good luck with
that. I'm like, Sally, I don't know.
Sally, where do I begin?
Sally, I don't know what it is. But then the great thing happened to me is we were going to Pretoria with my white mate, and I actually told the story while I was doing comedy. We go to Pretoria, and as we drive into Pretoria, we got lost somewhere. And we asked the petrol attendant, like, you know, you do before you had GPS. And the guy wraps off in vernac. And I was like, boss, I'm so sorry, my man. And then my mate Mark's like, don't worry, I got it. See, just go down here. So I was like, oh, okay. We get to Pretoria. I said, Mike, we're still lost, bro. You need to ask us. Like, the Oaks wraps off in Afrikaans. And I was like, don't worry, Mike, I got this.
Yes.
Yes. And I was like, this is the South Africa that Madiba.
But, oh, man, it's just fantastic. You know, there's so many things that we don't stop to kind of take cognizance of how far we've come.
Yeah.
And people don't know each other's stories. And we love to.
That's a thing for
we
me.
We love to assume a whole bunch of shit about somebody.
Yeah.
But we don't bother to ask them. Nobody asks you.
And I've always thought that South Africans have phenomenal stories to tell. There are so many of us, but nobody, there's no portal. There's no, like I've said to myself, if I had a TV show, I would do that. I would have one random South African every day. You sit and obviously it's got to be, I don't want you to tell me, oh, I have four children and I'm a wife. No.
I don't want to know your demographics.
Yeah. I want to know
what
like,
your story is.
What your story is. Yeah. And like, how did you come and how did you get that? And how did you, like, just those interesting little stories. Because people do have stories. I mean, like, when people ask me about the story of how got from Kimberley to Joburg, we literally walked, and I remember feeling like this is far. Like,
well, you were three,
I was
for
like,
God's
how
sake.
Where are we going? Like, why are we walking so far?
Have you ever spoken to Portia since that
no, I haven't
day when
to
she came
since.
To try and get you?
I don't think I'll be able to. I mean, I'd recognize her because I saw her till I was 16, so I'd recognize her. But I was driving on the highway the other day, and on the N1 2 years ago, and I was going home. And I looked to the left, and there was a man who looked exactly like me. And when he looked at me and I looked at him, it was that moment of, whoa. And I looked, and he, like, similarities, everything. And I had to push brake because the cars were coming up, and I stopped, and he zoomed off. But I was like, that for me is the weird thing, is like, anybody, any older white man that's 25 years older than me could be my dad. And I would never know. I could walk past him. He could be cleaning somewhere, something, and I could never know. Like that movie that's come out now, Lion, with Dave Patel. Have you heard that story?
I heard the story.
It's just a phenomenal story. And it's like, he is gone, okay, I want to find my parents. And Google ended up helping him to find the train station and the footage from that day. And that's how he kind of tracked her down. But like, I could never do that. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know if we had Google. Yeah, 95. No, definitely not. But it's a very different time. And if I could see my father now, or even if he's passed away, a photo of him, that for me would be enough. Just a photo. Because to see the similarities, I think, in what I look like to what he looks like would be very on par. Yeah. So that's the only sad thing I have about my history. Is like, I don't know.
Are you and your wife planning to have kids?
Yeah, we do. I mean, if I could,
she must be some woman. Where did you meet her?
I met her actually in advertising. When I was working for an ad agency for 5 years, I walked in the one day and I was like, hey guys, who's that lady sitting over there? And they were like, oh no, that's Bianca. She's the new production lady. And I was like, oh. Okay. And then I actually kind of like would go into that room just so I could see her like every now and then. And then eventually we started flirting. And then we went on our first date, but dumb us. On my contract, it stated there was no relationship status. So you could date anyone. There was no, but when she started, there was a lesbian triangle that went wrong at our work. So the one lesbian kicked the other
that's
one down.
That's a story on its own.
What? Hang on. That's a great story. So hang on. There was a, because lesbians, I mean, this is something they don't like to talk about. Again, we're stereotyping here, but lesbians get very aggressive with each other when things go wrong.
When good things go wrong. And the one kicked the other one down the stairs. Jeez. It was hectic. It was actually at a party where the client was there.
Oh.
Anyway, so they
violent lesbians.
In the new contracts, they stated, you're not allowed to date anyone in the office.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, cool. So when I met her,
You technically in her office?
No, we was in the same. Well, she was part of the company, so it didn't matter. So I said, listen, let's go for a date. But we work right across Nickel Way, and we went for pizza at Calcaccio.
Oh,
I was like,
God,
this was the dumbest thing we've ever done. I can't even believe that but we ended up.
Well, they're a sponsor of ours, so I'm glad you mentioned them. there we go.
They make great pizza. Let's be honest.
Amazing
pizza. Amazing pizza. Yeah.
But did people catch you?
No, nobody caught us. But then
she would have been fired.
Yeah,
or
she would have been fired. I've signed the contract. Then it stayed in mine. But I left then 2 months later. So I said at the end, I was like, okay, thank you very much for everyone. I've been here 5 years.
Bianca, we're on.
Oh, Bianca and I are hooking up. Peace. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And how long after that did you drop the question?
2 years later. Two years later.
Meant to be, huh?
Yeah, she's older than me, which is good. All my friends are dating older girls. We've realized it's better. It's smarter.
What's an appropriate age gap?
Older girls have no bullshit. Yeah. I can say that. They know what they want. They're straightforward. There's none of this. Like my wife will say to me, I'll say to her, she'll go, babe, I'm tired. I've had a hectic week. I'm not going to go out. So I go, cool. I'm going to go for drinks. And she goes, sweet. As long as you come home. That's the only prerequisite. Right. It doesn't matter when. It's just as long. And then she goes, but then tomorrow, if we have an event, don't say you're tired or you're hungover because you've had a good night. And I'll be like, you know what? That is fair. Whereas if you, no, but where were you? I SMS you. And I was like, no. So she, and I love that about her. She knows. She's like, listen, you're a party animal. Go enjoy yourself. Yeah. And yeah, so.
I love it, man. It sounds like you've got everything together. Now, what kind of prospects are there for you going forward? Because radio isn't all you want to do.
No.
You want to do a bit of television.
I want to do a bit of television, and that's why I came to you for that meeting for the show, which is I'm still going to meet with the people at Mnet and talk to them about it. But yeah, I'd love to do television. I've always have, and I've actually I'm busy now, and Anele's helping me, but I'm busy now writing a TV series too. Actually, well, one TV series, one movie, but the movie's as controversial as all hell.
What's the general idea?
The synopsis is an assassination on our chief and commander. The reason I have to make it because it's an assassination on our chief and commander, but it's by a black person, and he's not adopted like me. He's just a black person, and there's reason behind it. So it's a story that unfolds, and when you find out at the end how he got to this point, it's just it's a story that needs to be told. Like, listen, people were so upset when they were like, Thabo Mbeki was a terrible president. Of course you can be terrible after you fill the shoes of Nelson Mandela. But Thabo Mbeki did his utmost best. He was an educated man. He was a phenomenal
I would have him back. Crawl on my knees to have him back.
Exactly. But now we have our chief and commander, and he's just, I feel he's let everyone down. He's let blacks down, you know, the people that have trusted him most, the people that have trusted the party. And that's the sad thing about it, is that the youth think, or the people that are still voting for him think that it's going to change. And guys, it's not. He doesn't care about us. He doesn't care about any of us. No, anyone. So
we know that.
And that's the thing, is as soon as you realize that, people, the winds will change, hopefully one day. Yeah.
Well, dude, it's a pleasure to meet you. Someone says here, your mother sounds amazing. Please get her in for an interview. But your mum is probably a very private person.
Yeah, she'd come and chat to you. She's actually funny on the radio, eh?
You've had her on before?
Yeah, we've had her a couple of times on. Actually, you know what I did? You were speaking about 50 Shades?
Yes.
We decided, let's go watch 50 Shades with our moms.
Oh, no.
You know what my mom does? Yeah. So the scene comes on in the first one, and it's the hectic one where he does stuff to her, and I do this thing where I lean forward so that I can't see her in the corner of my eye in the movie theater, and as I lean forward, she goes, It's not as raunchy as the book, eh? And I was like, Mareke, don't touch me. Don't touch me. I said, Mom, don't touch me until this movie's over. Just don't touch me.
What is this brother of yours doing?
My brother now works for CMH. It's a car company. They run all the Fords and all the other brands. So he does all the intricate computer systems for them because he's very digitally enhanced. He's a very, very clever kid, computers.
Listen, I could talk to you all day. You've got stories to tell, man.
Thank you very much. It was very nice to come in here, guys.
Yeah, it's about time. I'm sorry it's taken so long.
But this is a great place you got here.
People love you. There's messages pouring in from people who just say that you are such an inspiration. You've got such an amazing story.
Thank you.
You don't sound like them. No, I'm kidding.
Like, what a great note to end this off.
It's like a backhand compliment.
I promise I made that last one up. There is no one said that. We're very smart people.
Think about this. Now, you must have educated listeners.
Yeah, we do.
If someone's going to listen to you, they're not going to They're not going to be. Yeah,
no, you're not going to.
That's actually great.
You're going to pick up your phone and accidentally switch on CliffCentral.com. Yeah. Yeah.
Because no, because they say that in radio. You can't. You can pick your nose, but you can't pick your listeners in FM radio. Because some of the people that phone in are just. Somebody phoned in the other day, and they were like, "This bloody sonar. Let me tell you, this guy, he does this and he swears, and then these." And he says, these blacks. And I was like, sir, I'm just going to, we're not going to take that on here. Thank you very much. Yeah. All right, click. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. Yeah.
Wow. Especially when you get those ones from the East Drag, Greg's people. Those rough
those rough guys. Love
all right.
Guys.
Listen, Lucky, lovely to see you. Yeah, and thank you so much for coming to talk to us.
Yes. Thank you very much. It was an honor. Thank you guys.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Yeah. And we'll hopefully see you again soon.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
And all the best with the show.
I will do. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. There we go. Lucky Duplessis, everybody. All right. Let's wrap it up for today. More is being revealed from recent telephone discussions between Donald Trump and Jacob Zuma. Yeah, it happened yesterday. The Donald is getting a little annoyed with Trevor Noah always being on his case and asked if Zuma could take him back now. Zuma proposed a swap whereby he takes Trevor Noah, but then he gives Trump Malema. That's where the conversation ended. After breaking her best album Grammy in half to share it with Beyonce, Adele has been trying to share other things with the megastar. Beyonce hasn't been too keen to accept things like half a giant meatball sub, or all in waffles at 3 a.m. And finally, Mr. Gary Player has said that Donald Trump needs time, more time in office before he can be judged by the media and the public. This now means the media and the public should from this moment refer to Mr. Gary Player as a racist and a bigot. So take notes, everybody. That's how it's going to work. We will see you tomorrow. Thank you, Mavs. Thank you, Sia. Thank you, Lucas. Thank you to you. CliffCentral.com